This audio recording is copyrighted 2008, Sales Team 1 LLC in Palm Rush. All rights reserved. This audio may not be distributed without prior written permission.
The topic is service. Most salespeople, justifiably and as to be expected, focus on their own commissions when they're selling. I mean, the idea is to participate in a capitalist economy. Everybody acts in their own self-interest. It's kind of like the invisible hand of Adam Smith, basis for modern economics, or pre-modern economics, I could call it. And the idea was just to go out into the marketplace and do everything you can to maximize your own gains and advantages. It makes sense. People have to make a living. Most societies, you're not given things. You have to go out and figure out a way to do that. So the concept of service really applies to yourself. I mean, you're trying to serve yourself. I want to make as much money as I can. I mean, the logical thing and the rational thing to do really is to look at it as like a dollar per hour game. How many dollars can I get for every hour of my labor? How can I maximize my gain? You can't really look at it as how many dollars can I get total, because you might end up working 140 hours a week and kill yourself. So you might cap the hours. They say, I'm going to work 50 hours. How much money can I make in 50 hours? And what you should do is you should go out there and do just that. The only restraining factors are typically legal, in that if you do some things, they send you to jail. Fraud, extortion, and the list goes on. Embezzlement. Okay. So most people don't look at me. If they looked at the economic equation of making 20 grand but spending 3 years in prison, they probably would choose not to do that activity. The other are company policies and procedures, and you want to keep your job. And if you do certain kinds of behavior, you can very well get fired. Other kind of behaviors typically fall in a category of personal ethics. Well, I don't want to do that, would be dishonest. Maybe they have religious beliefs. I don't want to go against my own religious belief. A lot of people say, I don't want to be greedy, quote-unquote. There's a nice one. What does greedy mean? Well, we're all greedy. We get hungry, we're greedy for food. You know what I mean? You may be greedy for sexual gratification, water, entertainment, company, whatever. Greed is just another word for a desire. Greed is a value judgment on a desire. You're trying to put a value judgment on something you want. If you want it, is it bad to want things? You're in a physical body in a physical world. Of course you want things. So the idea is you go out in the marketplace and you try to get good at something. You got a product that you can sell if you're in sales, say, and you want to sell as much of that product as you can within the time restraints that you want, hours you want to put into it. Basically, anything goes then if you have no ethics, nothing restraining you, and you're just simply going by the invisible hand, maximize your own personal gain, forget the rest. Then what you'll do is you'll pretty much do and say anything this side of committing a crime or getting fired. You'll exaggerate and lie and coerce and cajole and sweet talk and glad hand and on and on. It doesn't really matter what they want or need, you're going to sell them. If you want to see this type of behavior exemplified, go to a car dealer, the typical car dealer. That's how they behave. The culture is endemic, and if they'll do anything to sell you a car, they can care less. It's called system selling. First, you walk in a lot. The salesman immediately has to approach you, and then when you start acting interested, they want to immediately try to get your car away from you so they can capture you and hold you captive while they make you test drive a car, and then they bring in the sales manager. And if you don't buy, they bring in, you know, the closer. And they try to beat you up, and they'll tag team you. The objective is they could care less. They have very short-term outlooks. Rape, pillage, and plunder. That's the ethos. Well, let's look at that. Does it work? A lot of people have made a lot of money basically by being totally mercenary when it comes to sales. And then sales gets its reputation based on those people who, in effect, have pissed in our collective pool. By behaving like that, they've ruined the image of salespeople. We're not a profession. We're a bunch of crooks. We got the reputation we probably deserve, but it's somewhat exaggerated. They used to call motorcycle gangs the one percenters. And they reveled in that. They actually tattooed it on their arm that they were the 1% of the motorcyclists. I think someone famous at one point said only 1% of the motorcycle riders are gay members, like Hell's Angels. You know, Hell's Angels love that. Made them special, right? Does this work? It worked a lot better in the past than it does now. I mean, if you were on a long-term relationship basis with someone and you behave that way, you're not going to have a long-term relationship with that clientele. Just, they won't like you. But if you were in a hit-and-run sales environment, we're just going to sell them a car and you don't care if they come back. Of course, talk to Joe Girard, the number one salesman in the world, supposedly, who just sold, you know, 20, 30 cars, any one family over the period of years. He always had them coming back with their friends. He's the number one salesman. He sold more than hundreds of other people put together. The idea was to build up a clientele that would repeat purchases. Oh, okay, so maybe I really shouldn't rape, pillage, and plunder. Maybe I should take a little bit more care. But basically, they don't care about the client. They just want to make money. Does this work? For a lot of people, no, it doesn't work. It's too difficult. Most people are not con artists. They're no good at it. They don't want to live like that. They don't want to act like that. They just want to make a living. They don't feel comfortable doing that. Most people are not crooks. Most people are honest. If you ever want to find out if someone's a crook or not, ask them what they think of people. Oh, everybody's a crook. They'll rob you blind if they give you a chance. That's called projection, psychology 101. Psych 101 projection means you project onto others your own fears and characteristics or whatever. That guy's a fat ass. You probably have a fat ass. That guy's a crook. You're a crook. Beware of the person who has 5 locks on their doors. You better put 6 on yours, because that guy's going to rob you blind. They're not crooks. Most people are honest. They will skirt the ethical boundaries under desperation, because they're being pressured by quotas and to keep their job, and so then they start crossing the line, and it invariably burns them, and it doesn't work. And then people are just too street smart today. That in general, people are way more street smart. What with the boomer generation and the counterculture thing that happened, and then the Gen X, and especially the Gen Y after that, people are just too savvy. They have too much information on the internet, blogs. They have access to information about everything. They're really street smart. Watergate was just, you know, kindergarten against what happened later. They're skeptical, cynical. They don't believe things anymore. They laugh at commercials. The only way you can approach them right now with a commercial is to have the commercial parody itself, the anti-commercial. They're not going to believe that crap. You start acting like that, and you're going to see through you in a minute. It's typically the dinosaurs from that era who think they can keep doing what worked before, and it doesn't work. There are, yes, some timeshare guys out there still trying to pull this stuff, and there's still some people they can bamboozle. So what does work? Well, people know when they're being lied to. Either they know it consciously, or more importantly, subconsciously. Consciously is when you're thinking like you normally think. You're awake, you're thinking, oh, that guy, oh, something wrong with that guy. He might be lying to me. Your subconscious mind, in the meanwhile, screaming, this guy's a crook, run, he's a liar, don't listen to him, leave, run. Your subconscious mind is directly attuned to someone else's intent. It, more or less, all subconscious minds are connected together. It doesn't have to guess. It's wired into it. It knows. If any of this is news to you on the mechanics of how subconscious mind works, or maybe something that's been called the holographic paradigm, and how all brains are actually connected to the same reality subconsciously, and you're getting information on a constant basis from this, is called intuition. I can refer you to a library of books on the topic, both scientific and lay. I'm not making this part of it up. Subconsciously, you will know. Your intuition will tell you if you would listen to this guy as a crook. And here's what happens. There's something called the moment of truth. When you've done your presentation, a client, prospect, I mean, has said, yes, I think I can benefit by this. I probably really should do this. I'm just wrong. I'm not sure. I want to think about it. I don't know what to do. At that point, you can tip that prospect over, and instead of closing 1 out of 10, you can close 5 out of 10. I know this from a lot of personal experience. These are accurate ratios. That's a 500% increase in sales if you can tip those guys in your direction. Not all of them, just half. 1 out of 10 to 5 out of 10. If one sale, a month or five sales a month. One sale might be quota. It's a big ticket item. And how do you tip them over? Because they're going to sense that, you know what, this gym guy, he's a straight shooter. I like this guy. He just seems to have a personal integrity. And I was listening to stories he was telling about how he helped other customers and why he's with that company, how he looked at a lot of companies, and how very selective he is before he sells for a company, because in effect he's putting his own reputation on the line, and he's just not going to lie for money. He really sincerely wants to help me. He's only trying to get me to make decisions, not to get a yes. He's not trying to hustle me. You know what? I'm just going to have to go with my gut on this one and go with Jim. I'm going with Jim on this. I'm going to do this. I know I need it. And I just have a feeling that he's going to take care of me. Or there's Bob. Something about this guy, man. I remember now. I remember where I saw this guy. It wasn't him, but it was a guy just like him. Was it the car dealer? It was that guy who put me in a car and then immediately tried to sell to me before he even found out whether or not he asked me if I had any kids. I mean, I liked the car, but I have three kids. I didn't tell him about it. It was a two-seater car. The moron didn't even ask me if I had a family or what other kind of car I might have. Do I have a minivan and this? What's the deal? Yeah, I liked it, but, you know, next thing I know, he's trying to hustle me for payments, and then the manager comes out. I never should have gone to that dealership. I mean, it was a Saturday afternoon. It was nice. I caught the car out of the corner of my eye. Look, you know, it was sexy. I had to go check it out. But I felt dirty and used. I was raped, emotionally raped, and psychically raped by this person. I know that's an extreme way to phrase it, but that's the way it'll feel. Your subconscious is crying out, this guy's a crook, run away. And so, being a mature, independent individual, he walked. He left that dealership, and he felt better. As soon as he was off the lot, his subconscious mind was rejoicing inside. He escaped, like if I was in a jungle and I escaped from a lion. And that's the moment of truth. So the service orientation is that, obviously this has been used before, blah, 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 oh yeah, service, blah, blah, blah. For lack of a better word, to focus on your mission, which is to serve others, to help them with their problems, knowing that if you help enough other people with their problems, they'll help you with yours. And I think that's a Zig Ziglarism, if I'm not mistaken. And it's true. If your whole attitude and objective is just to find out what's going on with this company, what their situation is, see if your company can help them resolve their situation or fix it or improve things, make an offer out there and just only expect an answer, yes or no. You'll take the yes, that's fine. You'll take a no, that's fine. You're the only person who could truly decide whether or not a product is good for the company. Is the company, the owner. He has to make a decision. He knows the company. All you know is your product. He knows all the rest stuff you may not want to share with you, like their financial situation or other competitive, you know, secrets and stuff like that. But the basics are really clear. The quickest and most direct route between you and making a lot of money is to not attach to the result or the outcome, which is your commission. And the only way you can not attach to the money, which is the whole purpose of your working, is to make money. So how can I not attach to it? But the only way you can not attach to that is instead to attach to the concept of simply doing your work, job and serving others. Would you like to be ill in a hospital? You just came in on an operation, you're in intensive care for recovery. And the nurse is balancing her checkbook instead of looking at your monitor and worrying about her money and wishing the company had an incentive plan for morphine so she can give you more morphine but get paid for it. Would that make you feel good? That your lawyer only cares about the fees and not your predicament? And that the pilot only cares about himself and not really who's in the back of the plane? And the firefighter decides not to run in that burning building and say, hey, I might get burnt. If you focus on the prospect and the idea is to help them, then almost no matter what you say, your intent will carry through. The message that your intent displays will be delivered. That message will say more than anything else you can say with your conscious mind. I'm here to help you. Even if you don't know all the answers, you can always find out from your tech people. I'm not really sure about that one. Let me make a phone call and I'll find it right now, or I can call you back. I can get that information for you. But let me finish. Let's look at all the rest of what I was going to bring, you know, tell you today first. Da da da. But I'll answer that. Don't even expect a decision. If you don't have the answer, then you really can't ask for a decision, can you? Next time you won't have that problem. You'll know the answer. Oh yeah, yes, that our system can do that. Not a problem. I've got 3 customers doing it today. As we speak, they're using it. They have no problem. It works. You didn't know that the last time. You'll find out. If you guess, you're lying. Oh, I see. It'll do that. Well, if it does do that, then, you know, I guess you got away with your little lie. But you still lied. Because you said something, not knowing that it was true. If there was no subconscious mind and there was no communication other than verbal, there was no body language, there was no intuition. In other words, if we were more like androids without souls, without personalities or spirit, if that was the case, then you could lie very effectively because it would be, well, they said that, it must be true. As long as you can rationally justify what you said and back it up. But the fact is that we're more emotional than rational, logical. We do have subconscious minds. There are all kinds of verbal and nonverbal cues. And they will, even if it's under the radar, they may not understand exactly what it is about you, but they just don't trust you. And the reason they don't trust you is because you're a self-serving con man who only cares about the money. So again, you want to focus on your mission, which is to serve others, not your commission. And at that, I'd like to open this up for comments and questions.
Gosh, I agree completely, Paul, that the public, you know, whether it's the consumer community or the professional business community, people are very attuned to their gut feeling. They're skeptical, somewhat jaded, and to some degree, it's kind of an uphill battle to earn that trust. But it's, like you say, it's going to be those subtle cues, which could just be the most subtle nuance in your voice, the particular words you choose, which is really why I appreciate the way we work on these scripts, because those word cues carry a lot of subconscious weight and message.
I appreciate that comment, and we can expand on that in a second, but first I'd like to kind of riff off what you just said, in a way. If you were one of the best actors on this planet, I mean an incredible method actor, even then, people can find you out. You just can't do it. I don't think even the best actor can truly control what emanates from you directly, mind to mind. Because you're still inside, you still know what the reality is. You're still thinking, I'm going to get this guy's money. That thought traverses the boundaries. It goes directly as a direct communication across, and they'll still bounce off their subconscious mind and initiate a trigger response that this guy somehow, even though he looks really good, even though he's unbelievably talented at what he's doing right now, he's a liar. And even though they're not verbalizing it, they're feeling uneasy. Their pulse rate will change. Their respiration rate will change. You know, their body language will subtle. They'll start crossing their legs, turning away, crossing their arms, looking away. Their body language cues will not be open and going towards the person like they really like them. They're going away. And they won't even know it. I don't care how good. I don't care if it's Al Pacino or some other accomplished actor. It just doesn't work. And how good an actor are you? That's the question. Are you that good of an actor? Let's say they can half the time, they could fool people. And they're a great actor. A marginal actor can fool people half as many times as a great actor. But a sincere person won't have to fool anybody at all. They'll be communicating. You know, they may decide not to buy the product. That's fine. Great. There's all kinds of reasons people make these decisions. But at least you won't be in the way. It won't be because they don't like you or trust you. But they lack faith in you. They'll say, you know, this L guy is real nice. He's really nice. He's a really sincere guy. Just, you know, I almost feel sorry to tell him I really can't use this product. But you know what I'm going to do? I have 2 other people I know I think can use this. It would be perfect for them. It's just not good for us. And I'll get 2 referrals out of the deal. Anybody want to comment on that or anything else?
You can still be sincere and not be a good communicator. And I guess that was the point I wanted to make.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, somebody can have a sincere attitude and want to help somebody, but if you're not a good communicator, if you're not able to really express that sincerity, the fact that you really do care about what it is that they want and how you can help them get it, if you can't communicate that effectively, you're just clumsy and awkward and inarticulate, or you just haven't practiced and understood not only how you're sending your message, but what's more important is how your message is being received.
Well, that's a good point. Let's say I'm a really sincere, nice guy electrician, but the way I wear things up, your house burns down. You know, I electrocuted your kids because I'm an idiot. I'm incompetent. I mean, the basis is if you're a competent, professional salesperson, you know your product, you're working for a good company because you're not going to work for a bad one because you have integrity, right? You know how to make a good presentation. Those were all, in effect, assumptions for this, for purposes of this discussion. But you're right. You know, I should spell that out. Now, given that you can have the attitude where, look, I just want to make money. I don't really care about this person. That'll come across, and no matter how good you are and competent you are, you'll be surprised at how come I'm not making more money. Like, you're fooling some people, but you never get referrals from them because they really don't like you. They don't really trust you. They cancel deals. As soon as you walk out of the room, they start having buyer's remorse and misgivings, so they cancel the sale. Whereas someone who truly was there, made someone really truly does care about people, won't have to pretend, so you're much more relaxed. You make other people relax because you don't have to hold up this kind of act. It's much easier. And how do you learn how to care about people? That's the question. Well, I think the problem is that most people put on a false persona. They have one persona for their personal life, and they go to church on Sunday, and they're great fathers, and see their family, and they take their mother out for Mother's Day, and then they rape, pillage, and plunder the countryside. During the week, they'll do anything. They could care less. They figure, look, that's worked. Everything goes. It's all fair business, man. Everybody's a crook, and so why shouldn't I be a crook? And they justify it. And that's how a percentage of people are, especially the people who consider themselves, quote-unquote, religious. Someone tells me how religious they are, I hold my wallet. I literally sew my pocket shut. That's the biggest cue of all, that person's a crook. You don't have to tell me how religious you are. Why don't you just be religious? You start talking about it, I get real nervous. They're not sincere. They're the opposite. They know what that means to people, and they use it as a weapon against them. Two personas. One for your personal life, one for your business life, and they typically are mismatched. They don't match up because you're under some kind of assumption or false assumption or belief or cultural training that, you know, you should act one way or not the other. And my method is very simple. If you're ethical in your life, you're ethical in your life. Your business is just a simple extension. It's no different than any other aspect of your life. You could be on a phone making a business call 1 minute and talking to your child the next, and you should be the same person on both phone calls. You should be the same person on both calls, but you shouldn't be telling them, oh, I'm ethical, I'm honest, I'm religious, blah, blah. You don't want to hear that, right? Your attitude is that I'm not going to steal for a living, and if I work, I'm going to work with some integrity, and that's a personal decision of mine to live like that. That's my decision. And, yeah, there might be circumstances where I guess I could have, you know, pushed or conned some guy and made the money and made commissions. I'm simply not going to live that way. And in my not only personal beliefs, but my professional experience, which is quite extensive in this area, you will sell easily 10 to 1 more if you have internal integrity versus just trying to act, you know, like you're serving people, but literally have internal integrity. You're just not that good of an actor. People aren't that good an actor.
So are you saying it can't be learned?
What, integrity? Well, if as far as learning integrity, it's a character. That's more of a characteristic of your personality. That's something that forms typically over long periods of time. And people typically are what they are. I mean, they're not. Most people, however they end up, by the time they're an adult, that's what they are. They're not really going to change. Some people have epiphanies or major changes in life, and they can restructure to a certain extent. But if you have no integrity and you're a crook, and you know, then that's what you are. That's what you are. Can that be changed? Yes. But that's something beyond sales training. That's beyond my province. Okay? It's just I don't want to tell people. If that's what you are, then that's what you are. I know some good ways to relearn that. I would, you know, what I like, what I found to be helpful, but completely may not resonate at all with other people. Can you learn a service orientation where you're trying to help others? You have to fundamentally examine your own personal philosophy and guidelines of how you decide to live your life. And you have to say, will I succumb to this pressure to the point where I will start lying to other people? I hate to make morality plays out of this thing, but you have to ask yourself that. But even more important, I think I have a better method. Will it work? But is there a better method than lying, regardless of my morality or my strength of character or whatever? How about if I'm basically a crooked heart, but I find out that if I actually have a sincere interest in serving others, even though I don't really give a hell about them, I'll end up making more money that way. The method I'm proposing here works regardless of your personal ethical standards, morality, religious background, philosophy, attitudes towards other people. It really doesn't matter. All I'm saying is that if you will just simply do this, behave and conduct your affairs trying to help the other person first, then you will be helped. You will actually make more money. You'll make the deals quicker and easier. They will stay solid. They won't go away, and they'll get a lot more referrals, even if you personally could give a rat's ass about other people. It will still work better. All you have to do is during work is just behave like that. And then be sincere about it. You're actually going to make decisions. You will walk away from a deal if it's not good for the client. Is that possible? Not really. Because if you don't have that, you know, attitude in general in your life to start with, this would make no sense. You won't listen to this tape. You'll laugh at it. You certainly won't actually do it or act on it. Even if you were convinced that you could actually make more money and make more deals by actually sincerely helping others, the person won't do it because they cannot stand the idea of doing that. It just goes against the grain. They'd much rather try to con them. That's just, you know, it's just what they are. That's like saying, even if I convinced a moose that it's much easier to fly across the woods than it is to walk, the moose doesn't have any wings. Okay? It can't fly. It may theoretically agree, yeah, wings are, Paul, a really good idea, okay? But I'm a moose. So the bottom line there is I strongly encourage you to leave the profession of sales. Quit. Never come back. Go do something else. You know what I mean? Quit pissing in our pool. That's what I like to see. I like to see those people out of the profession so it becomes a profession. Does that address the question there, Jim?
You're here.
Okay. Beyond that, I would like to also then look at another element of this. And it's all about attachment. Attachment to outcomes, to the money. In other words, you're so attached, literally like you were glued to that. I got to make some money. I got to make a commission. Got to make a commission. Got to pay my rent. Got to make a commission. You're so attached to that outcome that you literally reduce the odds of you getting that outcome. By attaching to it, you're focusing on what you get, not on what the prospect gets, and it's instantly recognizable. And it's kind of funny when I listen to people talk who aren't trained to do this. But since I engineer sales presentations for a living, words to me are more alive and have more nuances for me. And you know, I know what I'm good at, okay? Than for most other people. Just like a food critic has a much more highly refined and educated palate and understanding of foods. And knows the difference between cordamom and cinnamon. And knows how this dish is supposed to be prepared and how onions caramelize and all. You know, I mean, they can walk in a restaurant and appreciate the food, whereas too, man, it's just, how can I charge $40 for a plate of pasta? It's got some, you know, mushrooms on there called truffles, you know, from France, with a little pig's spine. You know, but you don't care. To me, it's, you know, I'll just use the other kind of mushrooms. They're cheaper. You know, you can't appreciate it anyway. It's like a wine, you know, $5 wine is fine. That's good enough. Someone else, for a $100 bottle, you might say, that's ridiculous. And it may be to you, but they can understand the difference. It's just like a person who knows how to drive and understands it. Well, a Ferrari will then be something he can appreciate. As someone else says, a Toyota Camry is good enough for me. So you're attached to the outcome because you're so bought into the Adam Smith invisible hand game that if you don't take care of yourself, that you'll just be crushed by the economic machine. You have to go out there and fight and battle and get yours. You know, I mean, whoever gets the most wins, you're all caught up in this, you know, zero-sum game where If someone else gets something, that means you have to lose something. That's what a zero-sum game means. And there are certain instances where that applies, but in most cases it's completely ridiculous. There are no zero-sum games in the universe. There's infinite resources and energy in the universe. I wrote a book on that, by the way. If you can find it, go read it. It's online. So you attach to the outcome, and it becomes immediately obvious to the prospect that you care about yourself more than them. And you automatically are working at a disadvantage going forward because they might buy anyway because it's still in their interest, but they don't feel good about it. They're not going to give you any referrals. And if they have a chance to cancel or do it with someone else, they'll do that. They just don't like you. They don't like you because, you know, it's like going to a doctor, and a doctor doesn't care about them. It's just another patient. Line them up, go in there 20 seconds. Yeah, here's a prescription. You just feel used again. You feel like you were almost raped or abused by this professional. You're in his office and just does not care. I don't know what feels worse to people than knowing that someone doesn't really care about you. Do you guys agree that there's not much worse in the world than that feeling?
Won't go back.
Well, it's just in general. Doesn't that feel bad? If you were connected to your emotions, doesn't it? It's a total rejection of you. Everything about you has been rejected. They just don't care about you. I mean, on a minor level, a clerk at a retail store, even that's bad enough. But a professional that's supposed to be taken care of, it's a breach of trust. You know, it's almost criminal. You know, if someone in your family did that, you feel even more worse. If your wife or spouse or whatever did that, you feel even much worse. The closer they are to you, the worse that feels. Correct?
Yeah.
So you're just a salesperson, right? But even then, the guy's a salesperson. But, you know, I'm putting my trust into this person. At least I'm trying to. That person can cost me economically. It can affect my business. This is an important thing to do, and this person doesn't care about me. And when you meditate on that emotion and you start feeling it, then everything I said will become crystal clear. It won't be an intellectual exercise anymore, and this whole thing will work for you. Without the emotional element, you're no longer a human being. You're a robot. None of this makes any difference to you, does it? Here are the specifications for the A2 unit, 14 volts, 26 ohms, 2.3 euros per unit. Here is the quantity breakdown schedule. You know, if you're dealing with robots back and forth, then none of this makes any difference, but you're not. You're on a planet full of people. And guess what? There's 6.5 billion of them here. You know what I'm saying? 6.5 billion people. All right. And every last one of them is emotional, unless they have some weird type of brain damage. And that there are some people they're psychopaths typically because their emotions don't work. There's a disconnect. Their brain is broke. That's why they can murder people and they don't care. They have no remorse. They don't feel their pain. They have no empathy. They don't feel other people's pain. You know what I mean? And those people make the best con artists. Ted Bundy was a great mass murderer because he was a psychopath. He was really smart. He had absolutely no conscience. And he would get people to befriend these young women and murder. And that's why he was so damn dangerous. And he got away with it for a long time. That's what made him so dangerous because he was good at it. And a really good salesperson who's really talented and smart, who's completely ruthless and without remorse and feels all kinds of moral justifications for his actions, is like a dangerous element in our society. He's out there conning people left and right, and you know, and then we'll give him awards, we'll give him little trophies, and put him on a stage, and let him talk to everybody else. Oh, here's Ted Bundy, the salesman of the year. Well, Ted, how do you do it? Well, in between picking up young women hitchhikers who look like my mother and raping and killing them and dismembering their bodies, I make these sales calls, and a lot of the techniques cross right over. Is that too extreme, Jim? Is that too extreme?
No, there's a consistent pattern.
Well, the reason I'm bringing this extreme example out there is I want it to be memorable. It one thing leads to another. You don't become a mass murderer overnight. What you do, and I'm not an expert on the topic, I've learned a little bit about it because I study the human mind, is that it becomes desensitized to violence. They find justifications in violence. A lot of times they're religious and that, you know, I must kill all the whores and prostitutes. Usually because their mother was a whore or a prostitute. So they have to cleanse the world, and they tortured small animals, and they killed small animals, and they you know, stole, and then they hurt people, and then they escalate, and the violence goes. If you don't catch it fast enough, then they start killing people, and they, pretty soon they get good at it. They don't get caught right away, then they get good at killing people. Usually they get caught because they're really bad at it at first. It's like sales. It takes a while to get good, right? And eventually they find a really good way to do it, and they master that process, and that's what makes them so dangerous, is they become good. Then they start laughing at the cops and leaving little clues. Anybody who's ever watched these crime shows on TV understands what I just said, correct? Well, the way that guys economically learn how to be con artists is that they probably had a role model like a father, a brother, a friend who was out there making the big bucks, just like the kids in the ghetto look at the crack dealer as being the hero, right? Or the rapper. The guys who had easy money with the bling and the cars and blah, 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 right? The big shots. And they emulate these people. And then they go out there, and they have no personal philosophy because they had no religious tradition in their family. If they did, they discounted it or gave it up. They have no moral compass. They have no inner ethical standard. And they go out there and they try to do that. And if they're good enough at it for a while, maybe they'll succeed. But in the long run, typically with people more and more educated, it just doesn't work anymore. And when I get them on, they apply for the jobs I offer because they're commission-only entrepreneurial positions with high income potentials. And I get my fair share of these guys who are con artists, timeshare sales guys and the rest of them. And when I talk like this, they completely tune out. They're not interested. They want me to just go out there and have these big pep rallies and show them how to con. And they typically drift in and they drift out, which is fine with me. Usually I try to avoid them in the first place. Sometimes a few sneak in, and they typically don't like me because I'm not teaching them how to sell that way. It's a lot easier, a lot less stressful, and a lot more surefire just to go out there and help people. Yet why is this so hard? And you have to be good at your job. You can't serve others if you're no good to them. If you're not trained as a medical doctor, then why would you want to be a physician? You have to be trained. You have to be good at what you do, and then you have to care about your patients. Is that so much to ask? No. You expect that. So, again, I'd like to open this up for comments.
I don't think you can teach it. Like you say, I mean, a master actor, you know, can put on a facade, but ultimately they're going to self-destruct, and they're going to wonder why. But you're talking about character. You can't, I don't think you can teach somebody how to care about people.
Well, character is something that forms over long periods of times, and it starts early in life, and it's pretty difficult to change character once it's formed. You know what I'm saying? So if you're in an abusive environment and it was accepted, then you would adopt that as being normal. You would think that's okay when it's not. If you were living an unloving and uncaring family, you would consider that's okay, and the opposite would be okay too. So it's really difficult unless you personally strive to do so, in which case you usually need some kind of outside support system. Like you could study Buddhism or some other, you can go into some religious order or whatnot. Go to counseling and psychologists. It's really difficult. But basically, you have to make personal decisions on how you want to live your life, not on how you were raised. And you want to go out there and learn and then slowly acclimate. And you can gradually shift your character to a large extent. Your personality might be a lot of similarities. You know, you're a little quirky, your mannerisms and your quirkiness and all that kind of stuff, that'll still be there. But you can restructure your belief system. And this job gives you an opportunity to do that. If you thought that you can make more money by serving others, honestly and sincerely, it has to be 100% sincere, by the way, then maybe you'll actually do it, and then you'll get used to that idea of that service to others. You'll start the way you feel about other people will change. You'll feel a little bit more open and honest and comfortable, and you'll start smiling more. You'll feel, you know what I mean, more loved. I don't know, however you want to put it, but you'll get positive reinforcement out of that. So you can, you know, this gives you a perfect diet, because this is just part of life. Your job and any other activity you do during your life is part of life, you know, so why not here?
Whether that's from some outside religion or whatever, it calls for some inner work, some reflection, some retrospection on really who you are, what your life's about, because that's going to tap into your primary motivation. Pick up that phone and talk to somebody. And that's what you really want to communicate.
Right. Now, also, one of the root causes here is why do you want that money so bad or that commission check so bad? Beyond your base needs, it's probably trying to fill up a void within you that you didn't have self-esteem, you didn't feel loved or appreciated. So if you feel you have a lot of money, or you get caught up into this game where you want to be powerful, you want power over others, if you examine your motivations for money, you may realize that you've been selling your soul for a pocket full of stones, that what that money would get you is not really that big of a deal, and that it'd be a lot easier and more comfortable and happier life if you just, you know, you could be hugely successful and still make a lot of money, but you're not attaching to the money. The best way to do that is have a reason for the money beyond your own self-aggrandizement and your ego needs. Possibly you want to fund a charitable organization, or, you know, a fund to send kids for college, or some other useful purpose of that money. Then you have a place for that money to go that, again, you don't have to attach to it because it's not really for you anyway. If you consider money not for you but for others, then you're not attaching to the money anymore. And it's a, you know, then when you're out there, say, well, the reason I like this job, it gives me, you know, opportunity to, you know, significantly increase my earnings, and then because I'm really involved in this. I don't know if you tell a prospect that, but you might. But at least you'd know it yourself, right?
Paul, I think a lot of people can identify with all that idealism. You know, it sounds good. The real challenge is taking that and translating that into the actions that it's going to take for you to be successful.
Well,
to actually pull it off.
Yeah, all you need to do, though, is call by them. You have to prospect intelligently and find high-probability prospects. So you have to leave compelling messages for them to get you to call, typically to get them to respond back so you can talk about how you might be able to help them. And usually the voicemail or email or whatever you're leaving involves something around helping them. You are going to reflect how you've helped others and how you would like to do the same with them. You want to learn a little bit more about their company, see if it's appropriate. You have a chance to do your presentation. And you simply say, look, you know, I really appreciate it. I've done my best here to explain this to you. I really appreciate a yes or no decision because I'm extremely busy. I have these jobs to do and goals to do. And so the call volume and being really good at what you do, the easier, it's not idealistic, it's easier just to focus in that way because it works better. And it's not, it doesn't have to, it's harder to have to keep being what you're not and put, you know, putting on this act all the time. You don't have to have the artificiality in your voice. Is something that you must try to maintain, where if it's just you, it's easy. Have you ever seen an actor in a movie and it's the same guy? I've seen this guy in 5 movies, 10 movies, and he's always the same. Do you ever recognize that? I'll tell you something. What you're seeing, 90% is that's him. At first, he's got this real interesting, quirky personality or whatever. Like, yeah, Steve Buscemi, really great character actor. He's pretty much him in all those movies. He's got this really kind of craziness to him, and engaging. And then he acts that part, but a lot of what you thought, well, this guy's a great actor, that's what your 90% was just him. So it's easier just to be him than if he had to learn a completely different role, right? It would be a lot harder. So this is not something you have to try to do. This is something that's easy to do. It's actually easier to do this and get more success than it is to try to be a much better con artist and keep fooling people all the time and to mask your insincerity and your lack of ethics and, you know, and service ethics is a much harder thing to do. It's hard. It uses more energy that way than just being, I could talk like I am right now and just be sincere like this. It's effortless. I could be on the phone for 7 hours and not be tired. But if I was on stage and high energy trying to do the big hustle, you literally get tired after a little while, 5 minutes, an hour. You're tired. You guys ever notice that?
Yeah.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting to do that. And while you're trying so hard, the prospects are being turned off and freaked out by you. Yeah, ask me how I know these things. Because I learned sales like everybody else learned sales, right? And I found out that, hey, a lot of this stuff is just, this is ridiculous. Why do I have to behave like this just to make a living? So I just got sick of doing that. I was good at what I did. I didn't know, hey, here's what I got. You like this? There it is. Like right now, does this sound like a pep rally to you? Am I filling this with hyperbole and jumping up and down and screaming?
Thank God, no.
All right, well, I'm just delivering a message, right? I'm in a relaxed mode. I'm relaxed. Here it is, right? There you go. This is how I would talk to a prospect, exactly like this. No difference. This is how I talk to my kids, just like this. No difference. I decide I'm just me 24 hours a day now. And it works. That's how that works.